Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, Christmas is over, back on your heads. Yes, indeed, this is the 28th day of December, 2015. And 28, and 30, maybe, I don't know. So we got three rock-solid broadcast days left in the month of December, left in 2015. The broadcast schedule will be a little dodgy, yes, again, this week. Not sure if I'm going to go out for New Year's Eve or not. But if we do, well, I don't know. Probably no program on, like, Friday or something. The long weekend that just preceded us, namely Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, had me chomping at the bit by sunrise this morning. Oh, hell, I was after it last night, too, for that matter, yesterday. Because, you know, maybe, you know, once in a very great while, I'll take a night off. But the right wing never does. And the white wing never does. And the religion industry never does. So it just means that there's more, we've got a post-Christmas holiday Moran Monday doorbuster here. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah. I was about to forget that part, because Tim from L.A. is not in the chat room going, "What's your name?" Bob. Well, I'm just Bob. But anyway, it is Moran Monday on the horn, the 28th day of December, 2015. And I think if I started right now and just auctioneered my way through the process, we might get all the Morans knocked down by 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And something I need to mention more often for people who hear the program in delay on Stitcher, TuneIn, Roku, various and sundry other platforms. This program is live every Monday through Friday, holiday weeks notwithstanding. Every Monday through Friday from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That would be 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you're listening to the recorded version, you'll have twice as much fun if you're listening to the live version from 6 to 9 and you happen to have already jumped into the Horn chat room. Yes. Yes. Because it is a real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during those 3 hours every broadcast evening, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky this evening, Texas Betsy. So jump right in. Good evening to Jeremy in Vermont. Good evening to Jug of Punch, Little Gray, Texas T. More will be following along the way who are not so much standers upon ceremony and will come along as the mood strikes them. This is, of course, a listener-supported undertaking. That means you and not George Soros. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on Head On and Tune In, Bob. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. you, and not George Soros, because this is yet another year when Mr. Soros, the Dr. Evil of the right wing, the bete noir of the right wing, who funds all things liberal and progressive and showers us in great cascades of money checks, except me, us, we, keeps infecting the world with progressivism. George, really, I forgot to give out the address. If you prefer to support the program via the United States Postal Service, who hopefully will not break, never mind. You can send checks and money orders to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Remember, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid never sees them. And that what happens is Boss Man Wayne will put on his spider-proof gloves and reach into the echo chamber that is usually the Horn mailbox and occasionally extracts a couple of pieces of mail. So thank you very, very kindly to those of you who do participate in funding the Horn via the U.S. Postal Service. It is much appreciated indeed. So there's the mailing address. And Mr. Soros, can I call you George? You could use it too. For we are a poor but humble, progressive, independent broadcast organization, often running on things that are held together with spit, toilet paper, and baling wire. Yes, yes. George? No Zuzu pedals. Yeah, okay. All righty then. But anyway, y'all are who keep this going. And in fact, I would dare say it's probably more like somewhere between 10 and 20% of the people who actually listen to this program who keep this program going. Because the listenership is way higher than the supportership. But at any rate, we try to raise $200 an evening because of the week working out as it does. We're trying to raise, and the way that week ended, trying to raise about $280 this evening, tomorrow, Wednesday, that kind of thing. $280 an evening. That's 10 at 28. That's 20 at 14. 40 at 7. You get the idea. You have one at 280. Two at 140. Four at 70. Eight at 35. 16 at 1750. Oh, I tell you what, that little extra holiday break, I guess I needed the rest, did you hear that ciphering? That was some hillbilly elitist ciphering. Yes, so hopefully that'll happen Jeremy in Vermont says, call that 270 now. Okay, Jeremy, thank you very kindly for getting us started. Thank you very much indeed. And I had a note from Paul from Parts Unknown saying the Paulmans have shipped today. So if you are expecting a parcel of Paulmans, they should, with any luck at all, be reaching you by New Year's Eve. How's about that? And the Paulmans, they are delicious. So it is. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And Lord God, we're ready. As I said yesterday, we were ready for Moran Monday yesterday, barring any late breaking, barring the occasional late breaking Moran or 50. And of course, they have continued to break and break and break and break and break. Yes. Let's see here. Let's get everything organized because we want to do this in a right and regular fashion. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yes. Yes, indeed.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know.
Morans. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Right off the midway, not too far from the candy apples, the caramel apples, and the little places where you throw ping pong balls and goldfish bowls to win iguanas. Yes, indeed. It's the Moran Monday tent. Yes. And ladies and gentlemen, if you will just step right up here, you will, when you step behind this thin cybernetic veil of wonderment, dare I say, amazement, ladies and gentlemen, you will find the full panoply of right-wing birthers, deathers, tenthers, ninthers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, republicans, right-wing morans, one and all. Yes, indeed, you can't tell the morans without a program, but this is the program that tells the morans you just can't tell them much. For less than 17 cents per hour of programming per $10 per month subscriber, well, the Moran Monday tent provides an absolute cornucopia of right-wing moranity. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. A gentle advisory always goes out to everyone entering the Moran Monday tent. Keep children, animals, cats, dogs, the aforementioned iguana that you run one throwing ping pong balls and goldfish bowls. Keep them all close at hand, as well as wallets, purses, and European-style messenger bags, because, well, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And you will be, because we are. I'm busting out the doors, challenging the very laws of physics itself to describe the means by which one program can contain so many morans. Holy mackerel, look at them. Well, you can't, because it's radio, no can you? You're going to have to count on, you're going to have to trust me. But give them a three-day weekend, four if you count Christmas Eve, and, well, we're kind of just screwed, aren't we? Ooh-wee! Where to begin? Otherwise, I would ordinarily save this moran for prayer meeting Wednesday, but she just won't wait. No, she won't. She won't. We're talking, of course, about Sabrina Lowe of... Well, we'll need some help from the Texas neck of the woods here. It's either Rowlett or Rowlett, Texas. Uh-huh. She had 10 family members in her apartment on Saturday when they heard that noise that can only mean one thing. But it means that thing usually in the months of March, April, May, June. Not so often Christmas Day. But, well, climate change is climate change, and I don't know about what it was like where you were, but on Christmas Day, we had the air conditioners on here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, and they were working to keep up. It got up into the 70s, things get right toasty. And I guess it was warm down Texas way, and being just sort of a hell with a rolling pin on it, flattered a pancake, tornadoes decided to develop. But the weather's been strange and weird, and I'm sure that climate change has nothing to do with it. The fact that we've burned practically every hydrocarbon on the frickin' planet in the last 150 years. Oh, no, couldn't possibly be that. No, not in the least. Nope, sorry. But nonetheless, a tornado developed on Christmas Day out in Rowlett, Texas. Tornadoes did, in fact, develop all over the Dallas, Texas area. Yeah, hundreds of structures and homes damaged, 11 dead in the Dallas area alone. But Sabrina Lowe of, see, that's where it gets confusing. She's Lowe of Rowlett, not Roll of Lowett. We're struggling, we'll get through this. That's where Sabrina Lowe of Rowlett, Rowlett, and 10 family members come in. I don't know why somebody from National Petroleum Radio would want to stick a microphone in her face. Well, of course we do. And this is one of those moments where perhaps we could examine what exactly journalism means. And if where the for-profit media are concerned, well, there's no better day than Moran Monday for doing that. Now, is there? Disaster journalism is largely a numbers game. How many homes did the tornado flatten? How many communities down there in the highest concentration of upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual Christians got blown away? Mm-hmm. But there's not... There's really, if you get right down to it, and I want to offer equal time on this particular issue, because we all remember that when the tornado blew through that particularly God blessed, God worshiping part of Oklahoma, and Wolf Blitzer stuck a microphone in the face of a woman and said, "Well, don't you just thank God that it did, that it, they spared you and your babies?" And she said, "No, actually, I'm an atheist. I don't." And of course, the right wing world erupted in a huge a blizzard of bruga 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 atheist bruga bruga. And Wolf Blitzer was, well, he sort of made a fool, just trying to get her to God up a little bit. So we had that. Well, this time we have the polar opposite. We have Sabrina Lowe of Rowlett, Texas, and our dear friend Jude up in the Great Northwest alerted me to this story and set me to furniture kicking right early. She said, "We actually went outside and started commanding the winds because God had given us authority over the winds, the airways, and we just began to command this storm not to hit our area. We spoke to the storm and said, 'Go to unpopulated places.' It did exactly what we said to do because God gave us the authority to do that." 18 minutes past 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, and I can actually feel the disturbance in the force of many, many members of the Horn Family Commune community. The Horn Family Community Congregation, yes, pounding on furniture, kicking table legs, and just generally howling in outrage. Mm-hmm. She really did. Is Sabrina Lowe of Rowlett, Texas, really, really did. Jeremy in Vermont noting climate change. What climate change? Just because it was 68 degrees here in Vermont on Christmas Eve and is now 18 with snow on the ground and 4 to 8 more inches of snow and freezing rain called on for tomorrow, no climate change at all. Just more liberal lies. Lies from the pits of hell. The greatest fraud ever perpetrated on humanity, says Senator Jim Inhofe, whose snowball would have, well, melted as though it were in hell had he carried it into the Senate chambers on, say, Christmas Eve in Washington, D.C. Exactly. Thank you, Jeremy. No, but she did. She did. We go to unpopulated places, and it did, you know, because you know what? That tornado, it had a demon in it. It did. because these demons everywhere. Unfortunately, it didn't go to unpopulated places, Sabrina, you goddamn monster. Mm-hmm. Because, see, 11 people died in the Dallas area out of that storm system. The tornado that Sabrina Lowe was, Sabrina Lowe, goddamn monster, who directs storms to harm people, it was an EF4. It had wind speeds up to 180 miles an hour. It was among 9 tornadoes that were confirmed in the Dallas area. More than 1,000 buildings were destroyed out of that day of climate change horror. The tornado that Sabrina Lowe was talking about, it didn't kill anybody in Rowlett, but it did damage or destroy about 450 buildings. And see, this is one of those moments where I'm glad that I have more respect for Mark Twain than I do for Bronze Age prophets and people baffled by the operation of wheelbarrows and why it rains. You know, like Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, and various and sundry others. Because, see, Mark Twain made it very plain in The War Prayer, which isn't just about war, that when you pray for a blessing upon yourself, you are, by definition, also praying for a curse upon someone else. And that's exactly what Sabrina Lowe did. Or thinks she did. She didn't, of course. She has no ability to control the weather. Personally, I hope for her next act, she will stand in the middle of the railroad tracks and command a train to stop and not run over her. But for anybody paying attention, this is one of those moments when the atheists go, "Oh no, we got this one." Because, see, I think even in the three very, very troublemaking, troublesome monotheistic religions, I think you'll find some references in there that say that if you presume to speak as though God has done something, that God will work you over. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Bronze Age bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky was real, which he isn't. Because see, in the moment where she said that into the demon microphone device, and a lightning bolt didn't come down out of the sky and just leave her a little smoking greasy spot like something out of a Warner Brothers cartoon, that's when we know there's no God. I mean, the fact that a plague of locusts didn't appear out of nothing and just all over her till she was just down to no God. The fact that another tornado didn't materialize and for her pride and hubris just snap her up and drop her in anti-Oz, no God. But it does. It brings us back to the larger question, the larger nomination of the for-profit media for disaster coverage. So that was NPR sticking a microphone in the face of a human being in Texas who turned out to be an evangelical fundamentalist homosexual. And if and you know what, if that tornado hadn't got out of the way, I was standing there with my freedom protector and I was ready to shoot it right in its eye. You know, tornadoes have eyes, or is that hurricanes? I can't remember. So that was National Petroleum Radio. Here then is the New York Times. Travis Koscheski said he was alone in his apartment here when he was first alerted to the approaching danger by the classic train sound. Classic train sound. Does that mean it was not a diesel train? I'm not entirely clear on that. Not clear at all. No, but nonetheless, the whistling that Mr. Koscheski heard, when have you heard a train? Well, I guess trains have whistles. Boop, boop. Somehow that isn't what tornadoes ever sounded like to me. The whistling that Mr. Koscheski heard announced the arrival of the most powerful of nearly a dozen tornadoes that swept across the Dallas area on Saturday, leaving at least 11 people dead and reducing hundreds of homes and businesses to rubble. The tornado outbreak was the deadliest system to hit the Dallas area since 1927, the National Weather Service wrote in a post on Twitter. Although Mr. Koscheski, a 50-year-old discount store employee, escaped injury and his apartment was not seriously damaged, he said the tornado's power had been on full display just outside his door in his lakeside neighborhood. I noticed pieces of a mariner right outside my door. I saw an entire car sitting about 10 feet from my front door. And then some more facts. The storms were part of a string of severe weather over the week of Christmas that left at least 43 people dead across the nation, most of the deaths coming in a stretch of southern states from Texas to Alabama. One of them even touched down in a little corner of the county where I grew up. Local authorities were overwhelmed with tornadoes, heavy rain, flooding, and even snow that blanketed El Paso. In Missouri, rescuers Sunday found the bodies of 6 people who had drowned overnight after the vehicles they were in were swept off roads in Pulaski County. Authorities in Patoka, Illinois, said Sunday that a car carrying 5 people had been swept off a low bridge by floodwaters and had sunk. The occupants, 3 adults and 2 children, had been traveling to Kentucky from Minnesota. The Marion County Coroner's Office said all 5 had died, the Associated Press reported. Now, see, these are salient facts, and that's actual journalism. Weather events killed these people here, those people there. Some of it was tornadoes. Other parts were flooding. That's journalism. It is not how... I don't know. Is it journalism, or is it just clickbait? Or entertainment value to make sure you've got Mr. Koscheski standing there saying, yep. It was a whole car and a part of a marina right in my front yard. Or Sabrina Lowe's. And I was given power by God to make the storm move away. You know what? If I was a member of the families of any of those people who were killed in the Dallas area, I'd be looking up Ms. Lowe. Why'd you kill Mama? Why'd you pray the goddamn tornado onto Daddy? Huh? That's some Christmas gift, lady. Why don't you just keep it to yourself, sister? We don't need any more help. Stop helping. But Almighty God blessed this Christian nation with a whole bunch of weather events. None of which were apparently much in the way of good. Let's see, state of emergency in New Mexico, tornadoes in Texas, state of emergency, massive historic flood warnings for the area of Missouri, in which the Missouri, aptly named, river flows. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, sent me a photograph showing her neck of the woods blanketed in ice and snow. Give me snow over ice any day, by the way. And I guess some of that's on the way this way. But we haven't seen, so far, we're south of it. Ms. Carol says, I can't stop laughing. Bitch thinks that God had favor for her because she's a super fan. What'd he hit? Who'd he kill? Catholics? I'm sure no good Baptist died in the commission of her Merkel. Exactly. But this is pious Christian America. I commanded that storm to just go the other way. And maybe it hit some atheists or some liberals or something. Because they deserve it. They ain't going to heaven anyway. They just need to get on to hell. Mm-hmm. So when you've got that, when you've got that leading off your power, your power panoply of morons, you're in for an evening. Oh yeah. But don't be thinking it's just us. No, no. Let's take a little trip across the pond. Dateline London. Stephen Castle reporting for the New York Times. The British Army stepped in on Sunday to help evacuate hundreds of people from waterlogged homes across the country. I thought it would be, isn't it the realm? As swollen rivers and heavy rainfall brought misery to parts of the north of England and unleashed a spate of political recriminations. Well, at least it didn't unleash a spate of tornadoes. And for that matter, political recriminations in English politics are, well, haven't y'all caught the American disease yet and learned to say, now is not the time to play the blame game? No, of course not. Threatened by two rising rivers, York became the focus for emergency workers over the weekend as floodwaters engulfed many shops and pubs, not the pubs, and came close to the ancient city's historical buildings. The military, which had already been deployed in Cumbria, joined the police and mountain rescue teams in York on Sunday to help people from their homes and to bolster the city's flood defenses with sandbags. 20 roads were closed and around 3,500 properties were thought to be vulnerable to the rising waters. David Cameron promised to send more troops and do whatever is needed. Luckily, David Cameron doesn't have a mother to put in front of a microphone to say, I don't want to trouble my beautiful mind about what's going to happen to all these little people. No, that's what they've got a royal family for. Never mind. 200 military personnel deployed to flood-affected areas, alongside 300 already there, further 1,000 being held in reserve in case the situation worsened. They might want to do a flanking maneuver on the flooding and maybe encircle it and get that perfect victory over weather that people ever since the Battle of Carhi have been looking for. Mm-hmm. But this paragraph way down in, the disruption to major cities has prompted a more general debate about the extent to which Britain is willing to invest in adapting to the effects of climate change. Well, you know what? That's the funny thing about climate change now, isn't it? It really doesn't give a good goddamn whether you're willing to adapt to it. It's gonna happen. 'Cause we made it happen. And see, that's the important part, the we made it happen part. Liz Truss, the environment secretary, conceded that flood defenses had been overwhelmed. And Mr. Cameron promised to review spending plans, trying to preempt criticism of the country's state of preparedness. You should look at what you've spent, look at what you've built, look at what you're planning to spend, look at what you're planning to build, and ask whether it's in the right places, whether it's enough, and whether we're doing everything we can to try and help. But here's the interesting thing. I don't think the Koch brothers have completely gotten to David Cameron yet, because I read through the whole article, and there was nowhere in there where anybody within the Tory portion of the English government said, no, actually, climate change is a giant stinking hoax, old boy. No. Kerry McCarthy is the Labour Party, the opposition spokeswoman on environmental issues, and she said, the government must drop its complacency over the need for climate change adaptation. It must also invest in maintaining flood defenses rather than cutting them as they had planned, as well as look urgently at what else can be done to reduce the flood risk in future. Oh, Mr. Cameron, white courtesy phone, it's the Bush Ranch. Down that cul-de-sac in Dallas. You reckon Dim Leader's got like a three-level super hardened reinforced concrete basement that he and Laura and the guy who carries all of Laura and George's pharmacopoeia go into when the tornadoes come to Dallas, that they hide in while all the little people get blown away. I don't know. But Mr. Prime Minister, he's on the white courtesy phone, and he wanted to tell you a little bit about what happens when you neglect flood defenses. He keeps saying something about someone he knows by the name of Katrina. I'm not sure if he's sober at all.
Gonna be more. Watch, as the saying goes, this space. Mm-hmm. Now, it was Christmas. And I just knew we weren't gonna get through it okay.
And you know what? We didn't. Or some of us didn't.
No. You know, several years ago, I went to see a movie when we were visiting my sister and my brother-in-law down in Mobile. Uh-huh. And we had a nice time. The photograph in this story, there I go talking about a visual on a radio program dancing about architecture. The photograph on this story looks surprisingly like where we used to view the movie. But it was about 10:14 Central Standard Time, according to authorities in Mobile, when, in celebration of the birth of the Prince of Peace, shots rang out, like unto the bells of Christmas Day. Shots rang out at a popular movie theater there in the west part of Mobile, leaving two adults and two juveniles shot. Police say a male juvenile and a female juvenile, both 14 years of age, were shot in the leg. Two adult males were also shot, with one suffering gunshots to the abdomen, hip, and thigh, and the other just shot in the abdomen. According to WALA, a large crowd gathered outside the theater as police worked the crime scene. Many were juveniles there to see movies and were waiting rides home. Yellow crime tape roped off a portion of the theater exterior and parking lot as officers marked where bullets fell and took photographs. Fortunately, in the case of Mobile, Alabama, all four of the shot people were said to have non-life-threatening injuries. But here in Gunmerica, that means something entirely different because, of course, we are talking about Talabama, where there is no Medicaid expansion, and if you don't have insurance, you're on the hook for all that freedom that got protected. How sweet. God love them. Bless their hearts. Yeah. And, of course, the news coverage has nothing in it about who will pay the medical bills of the people who got freedom protected, who got Second Amendmented. Because there's never anything in any news story about gun violence in the United States talking about who's going to pay the medical bills. See, this is gross. I understand that, and it is morose, and it is depressing, and maybe downright evil. But as for families in Merca,
the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God,
it's cheaper to have your loved one killed than maimed. Ooh, yes, that's awful. But it's true. Your loved one gets killed. Yes, of course, you're deprived of their love and companionship, and your heart's broken, and your family's probably irretrievably shattered. But America is about money. And the fact of the matter is, the dirt nap is cheaper than the health care costs when you live in a place like Talabama, where these people had at least probably 3-to-1 odds they were not covered by any sort of health care. And then, of course, there is the right of subrogation and the fact that some health care plans will say, well, I'm sorry you got shot. That ain't our fault, and we don't pay. Go find that feller what Second Amendment did you and get him to write you a check. So, yes, the Second Amendment broke out in at a movie theater parking lot in Alabama. Two male suspects, possibly juveniles, are responsible for the shootings, according to Mobile police. And, of course, then this, the motive is unknown at this time, and police say the investigation is ongoing. However, several witnesses told local media they heard an argument in the movie theater parking lot before multiple gunshots, and there it is, rang out. Stories like that, they have a little bit of resonance with me. I remember it was 1996, late 1996. My mother had gone into the University of Alabama Medical Center in Birmingham, the best hospital in Alabama, to have her spleen removed because of something that probably was a result of the radiation cobalt treatment that she had to save her life from breast cancer back in 1973. Her spleen had become enlarged. The night before her surgery, she was as big as she was the night before I was born. But we felt good. You know, she was in good spirits and reasonably good health. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't cuss. All right. But she was 72, and there are risks associated. So they went in, they took her spleen out, and all seemed to be going well. And then they noticed her blood pressure dropping, and they had to take her back in and open her up again. You know, and surgery 2 times in 1 day with full general anesthesia for a person who's 72 years old is generally not going to have a salutary effect. And so they got her through the second surgery. She was in recovery. They had taken her off the vent. She was breathing on her own. And a guy who had been shot in a movie theater altercation, a movie theater outbreak of the Second Amendment in Birmingham, Alabama, was brought in and began to come out from under anesthesia. And, you know, people coming out from under anesthesia are often not particularly well screwed down, as the saying goes. And he began to scream and carried on, and scared my poor mama right back onto the ventilator, and she never got off of it again. 6 months later, there was a physician there at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, telling my father and me that it was well past time for him and me to stop playing God and let mother die. Trust me, you don't want to live inside my brain. Because when I saw movie theater shooting and I thought about the times that, and it's more than once, that Ferg, Agnes, Margie, Doodle, my sister, my brother-in-law have all sat in that movie theater having a lovely time. And, well, that. Yeah. Hi, Mom. But that's not all, of course. Oh, no. No, no, no. There were outbreaks of Second Amendment all over America on the holiday weekend. You may recall the story we had earlier last week about the fact that one of your no, it wasn't Tickle Me Elmo, Blow Your Brains Out Elmo. One of the big hot gift items here in Merca, which is still under siege from the Kenyan Muslim usurper, firearms. Because, you know, they are. They're going to come get our guns any day now. Just because he hadn't done it for the last 7 years don't mean that he ain't going to achieve his evil Kenyan Muslim purpose, usurper purpose, in the eighth and final year. And then make a quick, clean getaway and go live in Muslim Indonesia or Muslim Hawaii or something. Mm-hmm. Clackamas County Sheriff out in Oregon said officers got a 911 call just after 11 a.m. on Christmas morning telling them that a child had been shot in the face with a handgun. Shooting took place at a home near Molalla, who knows. But no, it was Christmas morning and people were celebrating their gifts, and it turns out Cletus had got him a gun cleaning kit for Christmas. That, according to KGW. Yeah, 24-year-old Uncle Luke Andrew Bowman. And I've cleaned a .45 caliber handgun once or twice, and I'm still trying to figure out how you do it with a bullet in the chamber. 24-year-old Uncle Luke Andrew Cletus Bowman was cleaning his .45 caliber Second Amendment Remedy Freedom Protector. Clean Wolverines! When the handgun went off. Coming to be one of my least favorite phrases in American journalism. When the handgun went off, striking the girl in the cheek. She was flown, the precious little 2-year-old Second Amendment victim, was flown to a Portland, Oregon area hospital and was undergoing surgery, and she is expected to survive. Apparently, 24-year-old Uncle Luke Andrew Bowman Cletus just winged her, or I guess in this case, cheeked her. And you know, she's 2. So by the time she's old enough to be worrying about things like makeup and boys and stuff, maybe there where 24-year-old Uncle Luke Cletus Andrew Bowman cheeked her, maybe it'll just look like a big acne scar. But they'll tell the story around the Christmas table about the day freedom broke out there in Molalla, Oregon, and how she really got that scar. And, of course, no mention in this news story either, in the coverage either from KGW or KOIN, about how the little 2-year-old girl's wounds and the subsequent surgical treatment of same are going to be paid for. Because I'm guessing 24-year-old Uncle Cletus Luke Andrew Bowman ain't got it. And then because, well, it was just a Christmas miracle, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office said no criminal charges had been filed. Because after all, we know from earlier in the story that the gun just went off. Maybe the same demon that was in the tornado in Texas, it just went over and got into 24-year-old Uncle Cletus Luke Andrew Bowman's Freedom Protector. Because he didn't mean to. Oh, and suddenly I find myself remembering those Halcon days in first-year law, maybe the very first day of first-year law, the first day of torts. When the professor picked out one individual and said, "Stand up, son." No, it was, I think. And the young jurisprudential scholar stood up and he said, "Son, every day for the rest of the semester, when I point at you, you've got one thing to say." Yeah, he said, "It is the most important lesson to be learned, and that's why we teach it on the first day of torts, on the first day of law school. All liability is based upon fault. Say it, son, say it." And by this time, the young man was kind of blushing, and this wasn't what it was like on the goddamn paper chase. Now, they don't have to do this on L.A. law, which was a big deal at the time. And he was kind of looking around and hoping that somebody pull out the death ray from their backpack and just kind of vaporize him where he stood. But he got it out, and he said, "All liability is based upon fault." And then he made the whole class, made all of us say it with him. And so it was a merry little legal hallelujah chorus of "All liability is based upon fault." And really, from that day forward, for the rest of the semester, every so often, the professor would point at him and like a parrot, he would say, "All liability is based upon fault." And it is. And so that business about the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office said no criminal charges had been filed, well, that's based upon intent, I presume. Because when they interviewed 24-year-old Uncle Cletus Luke Andrew Bowman, he said, "Well, damn sure didn't." I know, wrong accent, Oregon and everything, but come on, it's a Cletus. Give me some artistic license here, for Christ's sakes. "Well, hell, it ain't like I meant to shoot her in the cheek. I didn't mean to shoot her at all. I didn't mean to shoot nobody. I mean, the gun just went off." Because guns do that. And the sheriff's deputy patted him on his pointy little head and said, there, son, we ain't going to file no criminal charges. You didn't mean to." Which sort of, I only mention this as an aside, ignores an entire separate portion of the criminal code that I presume exists in the state of Oregon. To wit, negligent wounding, negligent maiming, negligent harm, negligent shooting, in which there are criminal penalties that apply to a person who accidentally shoots someone who, through a failure to exercise that due care and control that an ordinary, reasonable, prudent person in the same or similar circumstances would have exercised, managed to have a firearm in his control, went off, and shoot a 2-year-old girl in the cheek. But, I mean, we can't be filing charges like that on innocent 24-year-old Uncle Luke Andrew Cletus Bowman, because that wouldn't be fair to freedom.
Wolverines!
Wouldn't be fair in the leastest. And it wouldn't recognize the Second Amendment's long and storied history and the protection of freedom in this here country. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God! Bang! No, it just wouldn't. Huh. You can see that, right? Who wants to have to make bail on Christmas Day, for God's sakes? I mean, it weren't but 11 o'clock in the morning. He'd miss out on the turkey and the dressing, and maybe there was some ham and the green bean casserole. You don't want to ruin somebody's Christmas just because there's a two-year-old getting her face rebuilt in surgery somewhere. And besides, the sheriff might not get his annual bag of money from the National Republican Rifle Association. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see that, right? Because guns in America are, in fact, more important than people. And by a long shot, certainly more important than any individual two-year-old. I told you. It's an after Christmas doorbuster. Moran sale down here to the Horn. We got more Morans than we can handle, friends and neighbors. Oh yeah. So. Let's take a little break, 3 minutes before the hour. And we'll get after the rest of it. Little note coming in from Gerald. For sale, one 1911 A1 semi-automatic pistol, .45 ACP caliber, only fired once, we'll consider trade for assault rifle. Exactly. Or a boat trailer. Yeah. So we got an abundance with which to work. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Shootings. So, if you take a swing at your young'un in the face, it's child abuse, but if you use a gun, not so much. Well, exactly, Jack, because the gun just went off. Right. Because guns just do that, sometimes demons. Meanwhile, going back to the earlier story, Thomas from over at FYINation.com, subject line, Bob, one exclamation point, all caps. I thought only people who stopped the weather and whatnot were witches and DARPA. Either way, why aren't conservatives burning her at the stake? Because, no, Christians can do that too. Absolutely. Yes, indeedy. By the way, Thomas notes in regard to the storms in the UK, David Cameron said in the previous government didn't have any money to do anything about this, so how does he have money to do anything about it now? Good question, right? Yeah, right. And there ain't going to be no answer. I said row, you sods. You'll not,
You'll not get your grog today.
Roger out in Oregon says, Fox News hasn't decided yet how to frame the reason God has joined in on the war on Christmas this year. Pretty unmistakable that he included places with names including Holly and Good Hope and Quitman, and includes the death of seven, including a seven-year-old on Highway 7. He's clearly wanted to sign this work. But let's be clear, if God sends you a tornado, he's not acting. That tornado ripped right through Holly Springs, Mississippi, and it did. It killed a seven-year-old boy on Highway 7. One of seven. Roger continues, GOP shills are preparing to assert that those are the last two letters of ISIS and a clear indication that they are here and striking without warning, he says, referring to a typographical error in his previous email. DNC shills are equally prepared to argue that the GOP doesn't know what the hell they're talking about, and that it is obvious to their highly paid experts that those are the first two, not last two, letters of ISIS. And while they agree that it means there should be more funds funneled to the business interests of their largest campaign contributors out of the funds that are wasted providing inadequate food, shelter, and medicine to those poor ones, they think that whoever signs those bills into law should be from their party, not the other guys. Roger adds, much ado, airtime, energy expense, etc., was expended over the past week over which parts of the country would have a white Christmas this year. You're right. We still can't get agreement on whether Black Lives Matter, but 100%. Oh, no, I think we've got an agreement now. The agreement was sent out of a grand jury room in Cleveland, Roger. But 100% of broadcasters want us to be thinking of this thing called white Christmas. It is, of course, not biblical. What is biblical is a story about travelers needing a place to stay and being told there's no room at the inn. Organized religion put their best folks on this, and just 19 centuries or so came up with the no vacancy sign so that business owners could both brag that business is good and turn people away remotely. What a pity that we don't have any real-life examples of people seeking refuge today and being turned away to add to our history books. Oh, well. Yeah. And of course, we'll get to that in that business of the agreement coming out of Cleveland. In short order, Agnes notes that as to Cletus in Oregon, his defense of shooting the woman is the two-year-old. Is much the same as I never hit her with my closed fist. I never beat her with a rod thicker than my thumb, which is, in fact, biblical. I think. Die anyway. Whatever. Let's take a break. Shall we? If you want to get in on the More and Monday fun, you are more than welcome to. You know the numbers, right? Line 1, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Line 2 is the stress line, 304-663-4676. That spells horn, 304-663-HORN. And, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet that the government isn't blocking Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you would like to reach out by email, Bob Kincaid, same spelling at gmail.com, Bob at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, and Bob Kincaid is easily found as well on Facebook. Righto. So away we go. Break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Mm-hmm.
gates of heaven. You didn't understand. And you, the friends were coming over. Was it all a dream? Was it all a crazy dream? Saw them playing there before him. What were they doing there? Felt like home must be alright. Or was it all a dream? Was it all a crazy dream? Memories replayed before him. All the tiny moments of his life. Lying round in bed on a Saturday morning. To your daughters and a wife. To your daughters and a beautiful wife. Flowers by the storefront, and everybody cried. Everybody cried and cried. In heaven, are those things left behind? Maybe every day is Saturday morning. Two daughters and a wife. Two daughters and a beautiful wife. Two daughters and a beautiful wife.
Moran Monday on the horn, 7 minutes past the hour. And, yeah, what else? Oh, plenty else. Before we go into Cleveland, because it's going to take a whole bunch of, that's going to take a bunch of energy. Before we move toward Cleveland, one more. Because why the hell not? Let's just stay with it. See, this is beginning to mess with me a little bit. And maybe this means I need a long vacation. On a boat. Somewhere that it's naturally warm, not unnaturally warm. Or maybe screw the boat, just drop me on a little island somewhere before the hurricane. Well, but then again, you know what? Climate change, this planet. Tell me about your home world, Oosel. Who knows? Maybe nowhere's safe. Maybe I just better suck it up. But I realized I'm getting to where I have nightmares about gun violence in America. Once again, long ago, I had a professor. And he was a very, very good one, especially being as how it was a state school and everything. And not just any state school, it was West Virginia University, Harvard on the Mon, for God's sakes. But he had a bit of a research project going on, and he asked every student in every class to tell him if they had any dreams, because we were worried about this back then. Silly us. He was trying to collect, and he was big into Jungian. He was an English professor, but he was big into Jungian stuff and collective unconscious and things like that. And he asked us all to share with him, and he would protect anonymity, blah, 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 to share with him any dreams we had of a nuclear holocaust or nuclear war or nuclear explosions or fears of meltdowns or anything, because he was trying to see if it had crept into our subconscious. You know, it was not about analyzing the dreamer, but rather about analyzing the impact that the real world was having on the subconscious world. And, well, go talk to your favorite Hindu mystic. It could be that the subconscious world is the real one after all, but I really don't want it to be, because it is. It's beginning to take a toll on me. I had a bizarre dream. And when I say, the way I dream, it's not like, well, I don't know how, I only live in my own skull, not in anybody else's. So I, you know, being John Malkovich is not part of my world, and I wouldn't want to be anyway. But I don't know how anybody else dreams. Talking about dreams is a very subjective thing. And I've always wondered how it is that we can talk about how anybody else does. But I woke up from a dream in which I could see in vivid, I mean technicolor, okay, the really, really rich, saturated, bright stuff. I had walked from back here in the studio out to the front yard because I heard a commotion. And there were a bunch of emergency vehicles out in the road. And they were trying to get somebody out of a car that was flipped over in a ditch. And hell, we don't even have a ditch out in the road in the front of them. No. And at the same time, they were trying to open a water main or something. And they handed me the tea, and I was undoing the access to the water main. And I said, well, what's going on? The EMS, emergency first responder woman that I was talking to said, whoever's in that car over there just killed 19 people in a church out the road. Now, this is only a dream. And like I said, maybe it says more about me than it says about gun violence in this country. But what it says about me is that being hyper aware of it has seeped into my subconscious. And in the dream, I remember saying, oh no, no, I can't stand this anymore. How many more of these do we have to have? Now, these are mind movies. And I remember there was a car parked in my front yard. And I remember in the dream, I'm walking around the back of it, and I've just got my head in my hands going, no, no, no. Interestingly enough, I never had any nuclear holocaust dreams to convey to my my English professor. But now I understand a little better why he might have been interested. Because I wonder if anybody else is having those kind of dreams. I wonder if anybody else is dreaming, wondering when next the mouth of hell itself will yawn open and the Second Amendment will swallow up another terrifying handful of innocence. It was Saturday when police officers in Phoenix were called to the home of 39-year-old Anitra Braxton. Well, they weren't really called to the home. They went to a local member of the judiciary and obtained what is referred to in the Fourth Amendment as a search warrant. And upon arriving at the home of 39-year-old Anitra Braxton, they found a human body prone upon her couch, covered in a towel. interviewing Ms. Braxton, she informed police that the now dead body lying upon the couch with a towel over it didn't believe in God. And so Ms. Braxton informed the police that she had shot her in the eye. English can be such an imprecise language. She had shot her in the eye. That she, Ms. Braxton, had shot the victim in the eye, and said that she then kept the victim's body on the couch for 3 days and described it to the police officers as a shrine from God. There has as yet been no identification of the body. Police do say that evidence suggests the victim had been pregnant. So that makes the case more interesting, doesn't it? It's not just another case of an evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual shooting someone for the second, you know, because Second Amendment, and one of these days that Kenyan Muslim you slurper is going to put his jackbooted jackboot right down on our freedom-loving necks, right next to our Confederate flag tattoos and our tattoos that say only God can judge me. No, the victim was pregnant. So naturally, there will be a huge outcry from the right wing that this particular woman was criminally insane and must pay with her life on the horizontal crucifix for killing that precious little fetus in the womb. No questions, by the way, will be asked as to whether or how Ms. Anitra Braxton, age 39, of Phoenix, Arizona, will have been allowed to obtain a firearm. Because, you see, even according to the National Rifle Association, even the homicidally mentally ill in Merca deserve to keep and bear arms, because when the time comes for us to rise up against the jackbooted government putting its jackboots down on our freedom-loving necks next to our Confederate flag tattoos and our tattoos that say only God can judge me, we're going to need every single Mercan with a gun. Just like in Red Dawn. Wolverines! Yeah. Damn near froze in from the storm. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says, I usually accessorize with throw pillows, not corpses. Well, Carol, what do you do when you have to make a shrine to God? But see, this her having a gun isn't how that pregnant lady come to be killed. Her being crazy is how that pregnant lady come to be killed. She could have done her with a ball bat or a knife. Why you got to blame the gun? You reckon she might have dodged if she'd come at her with a ball bat? Reckon she might have head faked to one side if she'd have come at her with a knife trying to stab her in the eye? For, and I can't put too fine a point on this, sorry about the knife reference, not believing in God. This is like the second or third not believing in God and therefore somebody gets shot dead story we've had in a couple of weeks. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know. If I had a fin to put on it, I'd say I'd say better than even odds this one once she's convicted, and she will get convicted because she'll be found to be competent to stand trial. They're going to horizontally crucify Anitra Braxton. I'm almost straight up certain of it. Oh, I just got a photograph from our dear friend Jude. And there it is. Subject line just says, "Will this do, dear brother?" And it's a photograph of a hammock strung between two palm trees with some lovely yellow island sand beneath it and a vista of a blue, blue ocean all the way to a peaceful horizon. That, dear Jude, will do just dandy. Mm-hmm. Up over in Australia, a note from Robert, subject line, "War on Christmas?" How can there be a war on Christmas, Robert asks. It now starts around the end of September and goes on for 8 weeks. No wonder families have fights on Christmas Day. Everyone's exhausted by the eight-week holiday. Except for the young ones, my family no longer gives Christmas presents. It makes the day much more enjoyable. Meanwhile, in Victoria on Christmas Day, 100 houses burnt to the ground. Emergency services got everyone out and let them burn as nothing else could be done. Looks like it's going to be a long, hot bushfire season summer in Victoria. That wouldn't have anything to do with climate change now, would it, Robert? Of course not. Here in Sydney, it's been 20 degrees Celsius and raining off and on since Christmas Eve. Signed, Robert. P.S. No one was shot over Christmas in Australia. I wonder how that is. How that possibly happened. Well, that's because, see, people in Australia don't have freedom. You're all just miserable, unfree little serfs to some sort of not-gun-loving government that doesn't understand that one of these days the British Crown's going to come back, or maybe ISIS, or maybe it'll be the British Crown after ISIS has done tooken over, and they're going to come down there or up over there to Australia, and they're going to bring their headloppers with them, and y'all ain't going to have no guns, and you're just going to have to knuckle under to the English Crown again. Because you don't love freedom, and you ain't got freedom, and you're all not free. Because you ain't got no guns. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Hartford, Connecticut, is hailing a new and groundbreaking prosecution. In New Britain, Connecticut, they have a... hi, Darlene. In New Britain, Connecticut, they have a company called Stag Arms LLC. We'll leave out the digression on the possible meanings of Stag Arms. But Stag Arms LLC pleaded guilty a week ago tomorrow to having violated federal firearms laws. We have those? Yeah, because that's part of the ongoing assault on freedom. As part of the plea agreement, Stag Arms president and owner Mark Malkowski has agreed to sell the company. Well, how nice. Not shut the company down and keep it from doing business forever, because after all, the business of America is business. No, Mark Malkowski has agreed to sell the company and have no further ownership or management role in any gun manufacturer. His guilty plea was entered on behalf of the company to one felony count of possession of machine guns not registered to the company. The ATF is also in the process of revoking Stag Arms' federal license to manufacture firearms. But, however, because, you know, we wouldn't want to go too hard on the poor darlings, the company gets to continue to make firearms while it's pursuing a sale if the ATF is satisfied that their efforts to find a new owner are legit. And then once they sell it, the new owner has to get a new license. We could never, ever, ever just shut down a gun manufacturer because Jesus and George Washington wouldn't approve. And if you've ever been to Washington, D.C. and been in the rotunda of the capital of the United States, you know that George Washington's right up there with Jesus because that's the central mural in there that is the apotheosis of George Washington. As a result of the guilty plea, Mr. Malkowski, aged 37, will pay a $100,000 fine and will not be permitted to own, operate, or manage a firearms company. He will, however, well, no, I don't know. There's nothing here as to whether he will be able to own and operate a firearm. Tis a puzzlement. Now, this comes after a long and dedicated investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office that began in July 2014 when the ATF compliance guy went through Stag Arms and found a whole bunch of dodgy bookkeeping going on. And then, because of the dodgy bookkeeping, he found missing firearms and unregistered machine guns. Stag Arms issued a prepared statement saying, "The plea is in the best interest of the company and approximately 100 employees. And Mr. Malkowski is in advanced talks with a New York private equity firm to sell the company." Connecticut U.S. Attorney Deirdre M. Daly is very, very proud. She said, "For the first time in Connecticut, and there have been only a few of these prosecutions throughout the nation, a large manufacturer is pleading guilty to a felony charge relating to record-keeping violations." The company is also ponying up $500,000 as its part of the fine, and sentencing is scheduled for March 15th. Deirdre Daly continued and said, "This company did not just manufacture small firearms. They killed two. They manufactured semi-automatic weapons, machine guns, assault weapons. This is not an industry where sloppiness will be tolerated." No sloppiness, damn it. At Stag's facilities, the government's case included the fact that about 200 firearms could not be accounted for. Deirdre Daly continued, somewhat sheepishly, "We don't know where they are, whether they were stolen or whether they're on the streets or whether they're just in the wrong hands." Ma'am, can I call you ma'am? Ma'am, if they're just on the streets, they're just in the wrong hands. Because what's missing, and again, just as in the Arizona case, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, what's missing are machine guns. Now, we're not talking about the semi-automatic kind that, say, you would use if you wanted to go into a holiday meeting in San Bernardino and shoot up people. No, these are machine. Because a semi-automatic means that a lot of the work has been taken out of the equation for you, but not all of the work. I mean, you still have to go to the trouble of squeezing the trigger more than once. Every time you squeeze, the machine, the killing machine go bang. But when you've got missing machine guns, that means you can just put like a 100-round clip in it or whatever. I'm sorry, it's not a clip, it's a magazine, damn it, you firearm illiterate, you. You just put a 100-round magazine in it, and once you pull the trigger, until you let up on the trigger, that thing's going to keep going bang.
at several bangs per second, as a matter of fact. Wait a minute. We got all kinds of fun little tools here. Let's see how long that takes. No, it's a stopwatch. Where is it? Okay, there we go. Yeah, that's about a half a second. Yeah. About a half a second. Whether they were stolen, whether they're on the streets, or whether they're just in the wrong hands. The company pleaded guilty to possession of 62 machine guns. Now, these aren't the ones that are missing. These are the ones that were just kind of laying around. 62 machine guns and machine gun receivers that were registered to another entity or not registered at all. 11 machine guns were registered to an entity in the Philippines, one to a police department, and 25 to another manufacturer. The remaining 25 machine gun receivers, the portion of the firearm that houses the operating parts and on which the serial number is engraved, didn't have serial numbers. And nobody really knows. We don't know why those serial numbers were filed off. We don't know. We just don't know. It's mystery. Yeah, because the report from the Hartford Courant says some of the firearms found at Stagg also had obliterated serial numbers, a serious violation of the law. The government has not determined why the serial numbers were scratched out. Yeah, who could know? I mean, after all, who would want to own a fully functioning machine gun with scratched out serial numbers? Who could that possibly be useful to? Because a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered machine gun company in the new United States of America, it would never manufacture any weapons that could wind up in the hands of, say, headloppers or nothing, could it? No. Because they're murking, and they're defending freedom and the Second Amendment. Hallelujah. Meanwhile, in that self-same statement I mentioned earlier, Stagg Arms said, the company takes its obligations to comply with all laws and regulations very seriously. I think we can put paid to that with your guilty plea. And has made comprehensive changes to ensure that similar problems cannot happen again and the best compliance practices are maintained in all of its operations. The company said it also does not believe, that word, public safety was ever compromised. Ever. At all. Until, of course, one of those random machine guns that's probably just like out on the street in the wrong hands gets used to wipe out a church full of worshipers or a movie theater full of moviegoers or a school full of scholars or a mall full of shoppers. This is beginning to sound like the 12 days of freaking Christmas. 12 shoppers bleeding. 11 worshipers dying. 9 dead scholars. But they're going down. You hear me? They're going down. Well, at least until a hedge fund buys them. Then they're going back up. And they'll be, and once the hedge fund buys them, they'll be making their periodic VIG payments to the National Rifle Association, and Wayne LaPierre will make speeches about how Stagg Arms is out there as a bulwark against tyranny and protecting us against that day when the jackbooted government puts its jackboot down on our God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian necks. We're right next to our Confederate flag tattoos and the tattoo that says, "Only God can judge me." And we wonder why I have nightmares. No, we don't wonder at all, do we? Gerald with a note says, speaking of dreams, remember that time when Aunt B canned her pickles that just tasted awful, and everybody in town pretended that they were the best they ever tasted? Oh, and the face that you made, Bob, when Aunt B put you on the spot and you had to eat one of them?
Oh, those were great times, weren't they? Good times. Good times. Yeah. Because, you know, when that day comes in America and we got to defend freedom, it is. It's going to be just like Red Dawn, says Gerald. Only with drone strikes. They didn't have drones in Red Dawn, see? By the way, you notice that the government didn't have anything in their announcement about how they were seizing Stag Arms? Carol pointing out, get caught with weed in your car and the government can keep it. Not the weed, the car. Or your home. They'll seize that too. I think there's a lesson here. Yeah, I do. I think there's a very important lesson. Wait, what's that doing there? Oh, somebody forgot to turn the music off. There. Might have needed that anyway. No, there's a lesson there for us. You don't want your home or your car or anything seized?
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Yes, human beings, my friend.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Bishop Willard. You know, you only think you've seen the last of him. He may pop back up in at the Republican convention, like Nixon in 1968. I'm back. I said you wouldn't have me to kick around anymore, but now I'm going to do the kicking, motherfuckers. Right. Are we done with the gun stories? Let me see. Hold on here. Oh, nope. Sorry. No, we are not out of gun stories. Because, after all, it's Christmas. It was Christmas. Wait a minute. What's the... Okay. No. Nope. Sorry. We're out of gun stories. Please, God. Let us... but it did get right interesting in Kentucky, Stan. And I guess it's a Christmas miracle that there was no gunplay involved in this story. According to NBC News, something called a chain reaction brawl broke out that involved, get this, up to 2,000 people. 2,000 people. At one of the largest malls in Kentucky, Stan. Saturday night, the 26th. The entire mall and businesses in the surrounding area were all shut down. The chaos went on for hours on end. Mall St. Matthews was the location. It all started about 7 o'clock when six St. Matthews police officers, who are assigned to the mall for the holiday season, started responding to various disturbances. Police spokesman Dennis McDonald said, as they were responding to those disturbances, others were breaking out. Disturbances started to feed on themselves. They were just overwhelmed with a number of calls for service and reports of disorder. The officers on duty at the mall called for backup, and 50 officers from five different agencies responded. Spokesman McDonald said it was a series of brawls involving 1,000 to 2,000 people, ages 13 to their early 20s. Texas Betsy asks, is Mall St. Matthews a middle school cafeteria? Sounds like a really big one. Spokesman McDonald said the entire mall was affected. By about 8 o'clock, remember this started at 7, authorities started to advise stores in the mall to close. But the people who were busy brawling wouldn't leave. Don't you hate it when that happens? We ain't leaving. We got a brawl going on. Borderers. Businesses were in the process of closing their doors, steel grates, and you had juveniles that were not allowing businesses to close up. They were climbing on the grates. Spokesman McDonald said, this was a riot. It was crazy. Oh, wait, we're not out of gun stories now, silly me. Carol a minute ago said, you're out of gun stories, you jest? No, of course not. Police received reports of shots fired within and outside the mall, but investigators haven't confirmed those reports. Restaurants and shops surrounding the mall closed their doors as teens and young adults flooded out. Police spokesman McDonald, who had apparently a very busy day, said, took about an hour and a half, close to 2 hours, before things were calm. Police maintained a presence till about 1 o'clock in the morning. He added, we're all tired. But no one was arrested, and only minor injuries were reported. No officers were injured. McDonald said investigators haven't determined what sparked the outbreak of violence, but they don't believe it was planned. And for those of you who haven't gone there yet on the interweb tubes to find out where St. Matthews, Kentucky is, it's a suburb of about 18,000 people outside of Louisville. And as the NBC News story from which I'm reading notes, it's a normally quiet city that sees no more than two murders a year. You got that, Robert? Are you still listening, Robert, in Australia? It's a suburb of 18,000 that sees no more than two murders per year. Dennis McDonald was quite taken aback. It's pretty obvious. He said, I've been a police officer for 33 years, and I haven't ever seen anything like this before. We always plan for worst-case scenario, but this exceeded that. I know you're tired, Officer McDonald, Sergeant, whatever. Because Freedom Protection didn't break out. There were reports of gunfire, but the coroner wasn't called. It therefore did not exceed a worst-case scenario unless we just don't include random massacres at malls, movie theaters, schools, churches, and the like in the list of worst-case scenarios. Do you get my meaning? But it's the day after Christmas. So what is this, day after Christmas sale madness? Why? And look, I mean, we've got an international audience here. We got listeners in Belarus, Russia, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Ireland, the UK, France, Germany. Do we still have a listener in Greece? I don't know. Australia, Japan, China? I haven't yet heard that we have a listener in India. I'm pretty sure we've got one in one or two in Saudi Arabia, maybe the UAE. So that means we got eyes, you know, we got eyes on the ground in other countries. Canada, Costa Rica. We've even had a listener once upon a time, I think, in Peru. You know, we ought to do a check-in someday, just see where everybody's listening from. And people send me stories. And I don't get stories like this from anywhere but the new United States of America.
The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God, at the mall.
What? And I'm not trying to channel my inner Seinfeld. What is it with that? Why? And I also don't want to channel my inner geezer and say, what is it with these young people? Don't they know how to behave at the mall no more?
but I genuinely and sincerely do not remotely understand this. 2,000 young'uns at a mall in a brawl. Now, I mean, I can retreat into ancient history and I can cite you some stories from then. The murder of Claudius Pulcair, in which a mob then got right riled up about it and burnt down the Senate House and used pretty much everything that was wood in the Roman Forum for the purpose of cremating Claudius's murdered body. White folks have periodically gone on rampages and murdered oodles of people of color, but that's America. Tulsa, what was it, Rosewood, Florida. This is just the day after Christmas. And so, I mean, I really am. I'm trying to get my head around the dynamic involved here. Let's say they're fighting over the last copy of, I don't know, what's hot in video game. No. They're fighting over the last Xbox One or PS4 or whatever. But that's two people. Three tops. Do we have any psych experts in the Horn family community congregation who can explain how an altercation between two people it boils into 2,000? Because I'm done lost and gone on it. Robert sends us a hearty, what the... 18,000 people and two are murdered every year. What the... Merca. That was rapidly followed by another note from Robert in Australia. 2,000 kids fighting? What the... Maybe it's time for a name change. We're no longer the United States of Merca. We're the United States of... What the... Maybe that's it, Carol. Maybe that's it. Simply and elegantly put. When we decided black lives didn't matter, human life had no value. This country, for all its wailing about the fetuses, gives not one fuck about human life. Everything is for fun or profit. We're the outliers, Bob. We still think life has value. Amen. But I am, you see stories like this and you just, I'm licked. And then there's Sarah Silverman. And I don't know, I guess I don't anymore. I don't take any pleasure in it. I don't get any joy out of fighting with wing nuts on the internet. Because as something I read once upon a time said, you know what you've done when you win an argument on the internet? You've won an argument on the internet. Yeah, you. But Sarah Silverman trolled the wing nuts and the upstanding God fearing Bible believing Christ centered Christians. Evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, and frankly, Ms. Silverman, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Because they got guns, and you probably don't. And all she did was on Christmas, she tweeted, "Merry Christmas," all caps, "Jesus was gender fluid."
And the right-wing, God-fearing, et cetera, went nuts. Someone who calls themselves liberals do suck. Said Jesus was about as gender-fluid as you are funny. Hashtag idiot. At least they spelled idiot right. Texas Rising said, you're real brave and funny now. We'll see who's laughing when you meet him. Well, she's probably got a better shot than you do, Cletus. She's Jewish. So's he. No wonder Jimmy dumped you, then married someone else. You have become a bitter, unfunny hack like at Rosie, at Joy V. Behar, at Bill Maher. But it's always good when the white wingers play the butthurt card relative to Islam. Cry for attention from Jewish Hollywood elite preaching to Christians. Dare you to say the same thing to Muslims about Mohammed. If you have balls, you worthless hack of an actress. Well, okay. If you have balls, you worthless hack of an actress, you'll do something about Muhammad on Ramadan, but you won't, LOL. So edgy, so irreverent. Now try mocking pedo-Hamid, you pathetic, pusillanimous sociopath. But then there's always one of those kumbaya types. Sarah K. Silverman, the offer of salvation in Jesus Christ, the King of the Jews, is still open to you. Check a local church tomorrow. Have a blessed day. I added the have a blessed day part. But that's the mild stuff. This is the one that lets you know. This one probably says more about Merca than any other single tweet. Jew, J-E-W, are a disgusting person. Do you know that? And then, finally. And the first time I read it, and the second time I read it, and now I'm reading it again. Turns my stomach. This isn't a hockey puck alert. This is a have a bucket to throw up in nearby alert. Now these are Republicans, okay? These are good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Republicans. A.R. Wright Esquire tweeted, oven-worthy tweet. And then someone else who is pretty obvious, real name is probably Ivan Got a Secret or alias Undercover. Or Ivan Jackoff. Said, at Sarah K. Silverman, she's funny. We'll put her in the oven last. And these are also largely the same people who are having hissies about Syrian refugees, are convinced that ISIS is going to come in and render their local Wally World a heap of smoke and rubble. And I am sure if you laid them all out on a Venn diagram, these are the same people who were outraged over the coffee cup at Starbucks not being Jesus-y enough. See, that kind of stuff, that has been a sickness and a disease that has infected Christendom for at least 1300, 1400, no, no,
1,800 years. That's the mindset that led to pogroms and to concepts of ghettos and pales. And it is a hate-filled, vicious undercurrent of homicidal intent that runs just barely under the surface. Of the dominant right wing in this country. But here's the interesting thing. As someone who knows a little bit about Christianity's origins, Sarah Silverman was probably correct. Jesus was, in fact, gender fluid. Now, in the last couple of minutes, before the top of the third hour, it is worth noting that the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are known as the Synoptic Gospels because they come from a single source. That single source is often referred to as Q. It comes from 19th century biblical textual criticism. There's a fourth Gospel, not John, that is contemporary to Matthew, Mark, and Luke that also pretty obviously comes from Q. In other words, somebody jotted down notes of stuff that Yeshua said, or that they thought Yeshua said, or that they had heard Yeshua said, and then it got propounded and expounded upon by the author of Matthew, of Mark, of Luke, and of the Gospel of Thomas. The Gospel of Thomas reads like a mystical document. It reads as if Yeshua was some kind of, you know, mystic. And it actually, in many ways, reads as being more authentic than certainly the Gospel of John. Because we know from other references that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, spoke in parables and riddles. And tried to teach that way, and he was dealing with his disciples, who in the Gospel of Thomas, he goes on to explain, were atne ute aitbre, if you one what I in me. Verse 22 of the Gospel of Thomas says, Jesus saw infants being suckled. He said to his disciples, these infants being suckled are like those who enter the kingdom. They said to him, because again, they are the disciples, and they are atne ute aitbre, if you one what I in me. They said to him, shall we then as children enter the kingdom? Jesus said to them, when you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male, nor the female female, and when you fashion eyes in the place of an eye, and a hand in the place of a hand, and a foot in place of a foot, and a likeness in place of a likeness, then you will enter the kingdom. But you notice that. When you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male, nor the female female. So congratulations, Sarah Silverman. Yes, in damn deedly do. Jesus was, in fact, gender fluid.
And yes, in fact, right-wingers are way too goddamn stupid. Ever be capable of learning anything even half that simple or a quarter. As Carol notes, Christians are too busy out beating the fuck out of Sikhs because the collective Kleetai think they're Muslim terrorists. You know what would have been helpful in the Mall St. Matthews story? Because after all, St. Matthews is a quiet suburb of about 18,000 that experiences only about 2 murders a year. Two thousand young people going absolutely out of their minds. You know what would have been handy in that NBC News report? A reference. Because, I don't know, I've got a betting urge. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd like to have had an ethnicity reference in there. Or maybe it was just an even mix. Why do I think that that's a case of white folks behaving badly? That's I'm probably bringing my own bias to the situation. Why? Because if that had been 2,000 people of color behaving badly, we would have a story about a mass shooting at Mall St. Matthews and stories about how the police feared for their lives. No arrests were made. Is that me? Is that my bias? I don't know. I don't know. Well, we were trying to raise $280 this evening. We are, thanks to Jeremy in Texas, Betsy, thank you. We are at $250. So we need 25 more folks at $10 apiece, etc. So as not to spend the waning days of 2015 crawling down into a hole up from which we cannot look. Or struggle to look. Whatever. We're taking a break. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Jesus. The Missing Years. It was raining, it was cold. West Bethlehem was no place for a 12-year-old. So he packed his bag and he headed out to find out what the world's about. He went to France, he went to Spain. He found love, he found pain. He found stores, so he started to shop. He had no money, so he got in trouble with a cop. Kids in trouble with the cops from Israel didn't have no home. So he cut his hair and moved to Rome. It was there he met his Irish bride. They rented a flat on the Lower East Side of Rome. Italy, that is. Music publishers. Bookbinders. Bible belters, swimming pools, orgies, and lots of pretty Italian chicks. Charlie bought some popcorn. Billy bought a car. Someone almost bought the farm, but they didn't go that far. Things shut down at midnight, at least round here they do. 'Cause we all reside down the block inside at 23 Skidoo. Wine was flowing, so were beers. So Jesus found his missing years. He went to a dance and said, "This don't move me." He hiked up his pants and he went to a movie. On his 13th birthday, he saw a rebel without a cause. He went straight on home and invented Santa Claus, who gave him a gift. He responded in kind. He gave the gift of love and went out of his mind. You see, him and the wife wasn't getting along. So he took out his guitar and he wrote a song called "The Dove of Love Fell Off the Perch." But he couldn't get divorced in the Catholic Church. At least not back then, anyhow. Jesus was a good guy. He didn't need this shit. So he took a pill with a Coca-Cola and he swallowed it. He discovered the Beatles. He recorded with the Stones. Once he even opened up a three-way package for old George Jones. Charlie bought the popcorn. Billy bought a car. Someone almost bought the farm, but they didn't go that far. Things shut down at midnight. At least round here they do. 'Cause we all reside down the block inside of 23 Skidoo. The years passed by like sweet little days, with babies crying pork chops and Beaujolais. When he woke up, he was 17. The world was angry. The world was mean. While the man down the street, kid on the stoop, all agreed to life stank. All the world smelled like poop. Baby poop, that is. The worst kind. So he grew his hair long and he threw away his comb. Headed back to Jerusalem to find mom and dad and home. But when he got there, the cupboard was bare, except for an old black man with a fishing rod. He said, "What you gonna be when you grow up?" Jesus said, "God." Oh my God, what have I got myself into? I'm a human corkscrew and all my wine is blood. They're gonna kill me, mama. They don't like me bad. So Jesus went to heaven. He went there awful quick. All them people killed him. He wasn't even sick. So come and gather around me, my contemporary peers, and I'll tell you all the story of Jesus, the missing years. Charlie bought some popcorn. Billy bought a car. Someone almost bought the farm, but they didn't go that far. And things shut down at midnight. At least round here they do. 'Cause we all reside down the block inside of 23 Skidoo. We all reside down the block inside of 23 Skidoo.
Pure genius. The one and only incomparable John Prine. And Jesus, the missing years. Note coming in from the Angry Indian, based on the Sarah Silverman story. Angry says, "Internet thugs, especially the religious gun nuts, harbor a peculiar sort of right-wing personality trait. They speak vociferously about freedom of thought and personal liberty. Don't forget freedom of conscience, Angry. That's what lets them hoot and holler about wanting pizza bakers to refuse to sell a pizza to gay people. Or at least a gay wedding reception with no taste whatsoever. While acting like angry spoiled children if anyone mentions an idea that makes them wet the bed in the midst of a neoconservative nightmare. Motherfuckers start talking about ovens because a professional comic offended their tender sensibilities in 2015-16. It's a wake-up call to the entire fucking nation. Judeophobia never went away. It became accepting of revisionist Zionism, which is equally racist and equally settler colonialist, after the U.S. and to a lesser extent the U.K. began to see the existence of a white European state in Western Asia as a political and economic necessity for positive control. The Jewish state in the Levant, JSIL, is situated purposefully smack dab in the middle of the oil-rich Arab world as a gendarme force, and not in Uganda or Paraguay, because it fits the bill for recognizing capitalist interests and U.S.-led hegemony in that part of the world. Most Christians only support Jews as a means of supporting white power in the Arab world. My proof? Most zealous U.S. Christians are quite vocal of their intent to help God slaughter the Jewish people after they massacre the Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists if they persist in rejecting the sanctity of the rabbi, Jesus the Christ. Mentioning ovens means that the average U.S. right-winger is also a neo-Nazi, specifically a third-position, 3%er, contemporary North American neo-Nazi. This incident alone should clarify to each and every Jew in the United States that these fuckers will turn on them at a moment's notice, just like the passive populations of Western and Eastern Europe did with the Nazis and the Ustase in Croatia. What else is there to say but precisely? Precisely. See, when I see when I see things like that, I don't understand the mindset of someone who reads that and chuckles or anything, even does anything but responds with manifest disgust. And I feel the same way about making blanket jokes about Native Americans. Because it is an evil. It's almost too much for a decent human mind to comprehend. And that's why when we do comprehend it, it has to be confronted and denounced. Texas Betsy says, "Dear Angry, thank you, but most Jews in the U.S. know that it can turn in a moment." And it can. There's barely a place on earth where Jewish people have not resided in numbers anywhere from one or two to thousands, that at some point in time it hasn't turned. In a moment. Blink of an eye. And thanks going out to Jay. Jay just took us down to only $150 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Jay, very kindly saying Happy New Year. Had a note from Bob in Texas. He said, "If I were George Soros, you and Mike Malloy would have all your broadcasting needs met." It speaks volumes that the rich liberals are MIA in this lost country, which desperately needs to hear you and Mike. I believe they're just as selfish as the conservatives they say they despise. And it's just a matter of who you're connected to, Bob, I guess. But we're pretty much working folks around here, I guess. And when has there ever been a time when working people didn't have to support working people? But unlike, you know, cable television or satellite television or something, you know, you get here what you want. You know, you sign, it doesn't matter who it is, Dish or your local cable provider or DirecTV, you're going to get yourself some Jesus Channel and some Fox News with your basic subscription. So that means you're paying for it. With that, with what we do here, that ain't the case. were just trying to keep everything rolling, keep it alive. For, you know, we don't even operate year to year. It's the end of 2015, and I'm seeing the, you know, a Daily Coast needs to raise $1 million. This outfit needs to raise another 50,000. I don't feel too bad about saying it takes $200 a night to keep this going. Not at all. It is 15 minutes past the hour, and there's no avoiding the story. But even if one does not avoid the story, one is unfortunately left with precious damned little to say about it. The news came out from Cleveland today, Cleveland, Ohio. Ohio! Thanks, Drew Carey. The news came out from Cleveland today, and it was not news at all. Anyone who was surprised by the announcement has been living in a cave or under a rock or I don't know, next door to an entire herd of unicorn sparkle ponies and hobbits and leprechauns. A grand jury in Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, has declared that it has no interest whatsoever in even seeing if there was any injustice at all in the homicide, because it was a homicide, okay? The killing of a human being is a homicide. It's a matter of figuring out what kind of homicide that brings the legal process in. Because it's pretty much rock solid certain that Tamir Rice did not kill himself. There's that allegation, among about a jillion others, has not been made. As Carol Baker notes, right, because all lives matter, you know, and blue lives matter, but all lives matter, yeah, except the black ones. No, there will be no criminal charge whatsoever, not even so much as a goddamn jaywalking ticket or stream littering for the cop who rolled up and blew away a 12-year-old boy with a toy pistol in his hand. I want to offer one little bit of perspective. I submit for your consideration Elaine Rothenberg, aged 66, a visitor to Torrington, Connecticut. This story landed on Saturday. It happened on Christmas Eve. Elaine Rothenberg, aged 66, in Torrington, Connecticut, I don't have to tell you once you hear the facts of the case. She's from North Carolina, Stan, but she was visiting up in Torrington, and she was walking up and down outside the local police precinct station house, brandishing a handgun. At one point in time, she even pointed the gun at two civilians and asked them if they were police officers, and they ran away, unharmed. Then she went to the employee entrance and with the gun raised in a shooting stance at police, yelled, "I hate cops," and screamed, "Boom, boom, boom." At the police, she screamed, "What are you doing? Shoot me! What are you, scared?" This from the New York Daily News. Police quickly realized the gun was actually a BB gun that Rothenberg had purchased earlier in the day. She was charged with first-degree threatening, reckless endangerment, and interfering with police. She remains very much alive. In other words, a toy pistol, just like Tamir Rice had. Only Tamir Rice was black, and 12, and male, and Elaine, what's her name, was very undeniably, unmistakably white. And even when she yells at the police to shoot her, they don't. But no, there will be no further proceedings in the case of Tamir Rice. At least not on the criminal side. Mm-mm. I have conjured our buddy, the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man.
What's happening?
I don't know. After listening to that, you beg the police to shoot you with a toy gun. You threaten them. You point at them. You do all of these things.
Yeah, not that I wanted the woman shot.
No, of course not. You know, it serves no purpose. Because obviously the person isn't stable. You know, those of us who are sane can understand that. And it's not, you know, you're not supposed to fuck up people who are not responsible for their actions. You know, find out what's wrong with them and treat them. There's no point in taking them off the earth. Unless they're black or brown.
Or 12. And black or brown. And male.
Or worse, I have a link here or a story here, December 5th, 2015, CBSNews.com, expert, video shows Tamir Rice had hands in pockets when shot. This was reported, CBS News, TheDailyBeast.com, News.com.
Yeah, but this prosecutor was no less of a, can we use that word again, thug, than the prosecutor in St. Louis County. Ferguson. There were dribs and drabbles that came out angry. This was a boat race too. Okay, this was cooked. The outcome was known before it began. Because he was bringing in witnesses to basically cover for the conduct of the cops. Now, remember, there were less than 2 seconds between the arrival of the roller and the death of Tamir Rice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's also remember that the person, the terrified white person, of course, who called 911 and dropped the dime on Tamir Rice that led to Tamir Rice being a dead person, to be fair to the terrified white person calling into 911, the terrified white person said, "It may not be a real gun." But 911 dispatch apparently did not relay that information to the cops. So, I mean, I know a little bit about grand juries. Why, I mean, is there anything in the criminal code of the state of Ohio that could cover, deal with leaving out a vital bit of information like, "That may not be a real gun, and that's a kid"?
Look, the fucking police unions have it set where most of them around the country, they have 3 days in which to perfect their lie before they can talk to, you know, another cop, an investigator, internal affairs, any lawyers, you know, the feds. They have 3 days to get their head together to perfect their lie before they have to make a statement, written or oral, about anything. So, you know, here in Portland, where I am, in Portlandia, they have it in the contract with the police union that they cannot disparage the, you know, even if they find an officer guilty for abuse, for anything. You know, it was pretty vague on what this covered. It seemed to cover any sort of disciplinary conduct, that it can't be reported that this cop was in the wrong, that the police department actually has to continue the facade that this is an upstanding officer. I don't have it in front of me, but somebody from Paulden did make that public, because most of us, like most people around the country, we have no idea what are in these police union contracts. You know, if you're a miner, if you're a trucker, you have to, you know, those unions and everything.
Aren't those publicly available?
Except the police, unless I'm just not looking in the right, you know, at the right sources. Because, you know, there are different contracts in different municipalities, right? And then, you know, depending on how powerful their particular union is with the business community, how much pull they have at City Hall and what have you. But, you know, where I'm at, they can't even really say that this cop was evil. You know, figuratively speaking. You know, they can't say that he was bad. They have to basically, you know, portray that the police, you know, are a perfect organization, and this was one bad apple, and, you know, even then, he's still an honorable cop, and it's just a bad situation. Maybe his sugar was up that day. So, you know, forgive him. Forgive the rest of us. Forget the fact that more than 1,000 people have been killed by professional cops across the country in a year, way more than any terrorist act since 9/11. You know, let's ignore that. Let's ignore all of the children that are accidentally shot. Somebody shot a fucking his 2-year-old or 3-year-old niece.
Yeah.
The other day in the
face. had that at the beginning of the program.
Yeah, I didn't hear the beginning.
Yeah, he got a gun cleaning kit for Christmas.
Wow. Now, here's the fuck. I mean, are they bringing charges against him?
No charges will be filed.
No charges. Now, I knew a fucking guy that lost every goddamn thing because he fell off a fucking ladder. This was in New Jersey some years ago. He fell off a fucking ladder and landed on top of his young kid. So they take him to the hospital because he got, you know, bruised and what have you. This was a long time ago. They automatically accused the father of abuse. They automatically...
Child endangerment.
Yes, because he should have known where the kid was when
right,
he slipped.
Right, and that is the application of a negligence standard.
Well, he went through a whole lot of shit and lost his house and lost his child for a while. His wife, you know, I mean, she understood what happened, but the stress... They broke up, you know. It totally ruined him. And then here you have a cop who jumps out of a vehicle, doesn't even check the situation, boom! And then stands over him and doesn't try to revive him, doesn't try to fucking call for goddamn help, doesn't try to do anything. It's like, oh, well, fuck it. I need to call my goddamn union rep, you know. I may, you know, it's just a nigga kid. I mean, he's 12 years old. Fuck it. You know, that's one less problem we got to deal with in the future. This is the attitude. And this is why nobody's doing any goddamn thing.
Here's another question to consider, Angry. Carol Baker just pointed this out. At the time Tamir Rice was shot and killed, Ohio was an open carry state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, now, yeah. Now we know from Colorado that a man was turned into 911 who was openly carrying an assault rifle and went on to kill a couple of people. And when somebody called 911 on him, the 911 dispatch operator said, well, that's just freedom.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that happened here.
So as Carol asks, what law was Tamir Rice violating?
None.
Here's the second question. In out of the car and immediately killing him, did the Cuyahoga County or the Cleveland, whatever police unit that was, did they not violate his civil rights for shooting him for simply engaging in constitutionally protected Second Amendment conduct?
Under U.S. law, yes. Under international law, precisely. This is why the movement has to become international. This is why Malcolm X was assassinated. He was trying to make this... Because he said this is bullshit to call this civil rights. You know, the laws have already been passed. You know, we should already had our goddamn rights when we were free. The point is, this is a human rights motherfucking issue. This felt like most goddamn police officers, be they black or white. You know, one of the things that the Freddie Gray case has brought is that black cops are out here fucking killing us too. But once they put on that motherfucking uniform, you know, that whole bullshit, I grew up like you and whatever, you know, like that captain they put to try to quell things in Ferguson, he went up there and said, I got a black gun and all that. Because they knew what was going to happen. He would go up there, he's black, he's going to say the right thing, and he's going to get these niggas calmed down. And then, you know, it did do that. It did pacify a lot of people. Didn't pacify everybody, but it pacified a lot of people. But I watched his face when they really started, you know, really getting in his ass about what the hell was happening. And then all of a sudden he became a cop, right? So when these cops, because of the culture that has been allowed to develop in the United States, and not just the United States, Italian cops and French cops are not exactly known for being kind either. See, they're nice to American tourists. But they beat the fuck out of you if you're Roma, gypsy. They beat the hell out of you if you're a Turk. You know, if you're poor in those countries, they fuck you up all the goddamn time. People get killed by the police kind of accidentally in these situations, which is why the numbers are not really that high. But they beat these people. They sexually assault these people. You know, it's the same sort of abuse, but they don't go so far for the general point of killing people on sight, which is what the United States is doing, and now is happening in the UK. Because you had a Stephen Marbury, if I remember his name correctly, because I wrote a piece on this, that William Bratton, who was in New York City twice, was in L.A., was in Boston, that everywhere he's ever been as a professional police officer, as an advisor, the shootings of black men have gone up. The killings of minorities by police officers have gone up. The abuse against women, the sexual abuse of women in these municipalities goes up. And now it's happening in London. Not to say that the London police have been race neutral, because they haven't been. They've never been. But now their attitude is they have a free reign to do what the fuck they want. And people are dying in their goddamn custody. Sheku Bayou, Stephen Marbury. And these are just the two names I can think of in terms of black men in Britain who have been killed by the police. They're doing the exact same goddamn thing. They're stopping men. There's a photograph that I don't have anymore of several officers holding a black man so that they can take an iris scan of him. This is the London police. And they were taught this by an American. And then when you look at Shin Bet and the Mossad and the IDF, who are training American police. This is what happened in Ferguson. This is what happened in Baltimore. This is what happened in New Jersey, Philadelphia, Miami, New York City, and Chicago, and L.A., where the cops have gotten worse. They were trained by the IDF, the Mossad, or Shin Bet, or all three. And I'm not making this up. Any of the listeners can go and look this up and verify this.
Oh, I don't have it. And let me share something with you. Sandra provided this earlier under the heading of, well, that didn't take long. Sandra said, also known as Stay Quiet Negroes, today Governor John R. Kasich issued the following statement in response to this afternoon's grand jury decision in Cuyahoga County. You might want to get your hockey puck angry and everybody else too. Tamir Rice's death was a heartbreaking tragedy, and I understand how this decision will leave many people asking themselves if justice was served. We all lose, however, if we give in to anger and frustration and let it divide us. We have made progress to improve the way communities and police work together in our state, and we're beginning to see a path to positive change so everyone shares in the safety and success they deserve. When we are strong enough together to turn frustration into progress, we take another step up the higher path. No mention there of the fact that the path that he's talking about apparently goes over, well, you know, Tamir Rice's grave.
Well, as she said, niggas, shut up. You know, as somebody, because, you know, talking about trolling, I had heard that when you were talking about Sarah Silverman. Yeah, they really got in her motherfucker. I mean, they really kicked the ass up over her shoulders. But it's bullshit, though. She made a fucking statement. You know, there's a whole lot of goddamn people. The Gnostics will probably make a similar goddamn statement. But they're too ignorant to know anything about the history of their own fucking claimed religion. So they have to come out with ovens. You know, it had to go down to the level where she's a Jew, so what the fuck does she know about Jesus anyway? You know,
it went past that basement. She doesn't deserve to live.
Yeah, but that was the justification for it. See, she's a Jew, and then, like I was saying, in that, you know, I didn't mean for that to be as long-winded as it was, but the idea is they never really gave a fuck about Jews anyway. Jews wanted, look, I can say this because I'm part goddamn Jewish. You know, you can pull that white shit all the fuck you want, but that just goes to show that whiteness is a concept. It really doesn't mean
it's a construct.
Because look, if the only reason we even pay attention to the fucking Holocaust and not the Armenian genocide is because the average white person in Britain or throughout the Anglophone world in general will look at them and say, wow, they look white like me. So I'll pay attention to this motherfucking loss of life, even though when the situation was politically and socially different, culturally different, Jews were fucking Jews and no better than goddamn Turks or the fucking gypsies, right? So who gives a fuck if they disappear? Who gives a fuck if the Serbs disappear? Who gives a fuck if the Basque goddamn disappear? They're not white people. And see, no, that bullshit about whiteness is a colonial fucking construct. The same goddamn people that are doing racist white apartheid in Israel right now, the Jewish state in the Levant right now, are the same fucking people that were wiped out more than a goddamn generation ago and have totally, you know, conveniently fucking forgot what the hell happened to them to play race politics in Palestine. You know, if anything, after World War II was over, Germany should have been a goddamn cabbage patch for what it did in World War I and fucking II, and most of goddamn Germany should have been turned over to European Jews. That's where they should have put fucking Israel. Instead of looking at Uruguay, instead of looking at Paraguay, instead of
angry. That was a foregone conclusion going way back to the roots of the movement.
Yeah.
It wasn't about a homeland in Alsace-Lorraine. Or a homeland in Saxony. It wasn't what was wanted, okay, at all. And by the way, Carol just shared with me a tweet coming in from Chris Hayes, who remains, one of the better moral voices. The best moral voice that MSNBC has going for it. Chris tweeted something so garishly disingenuous about a prosecutor using a grand jury to launder their own decision not to indict. And see that, and see that's the thing. If you don't want to indict, you're the elected, I assume they're elected in Ohio, you're the elected prosecuting attorney. Don't indict and let the you use this tissue of a grand jury. You go in and you spike the proceeding, and then you come out and say, "Well, the grand jury has spoken." Because I don't think anybody's kidding themselves angry into thinking that he went in there fire and brimstone, wanting to indict those cops.
No, hell no. But there has to be, just like with Native American genocide, with the intended invasion. Come on, the Downing Street memo. Sir Richard Dearlove, the head of MI5, or if not MI6, but he was the main man for British intelligence, he told Tony Blair, we know this now. These motherfuckers are fixing the facts around their intent. They intend to go.
And it goes back, and I'll never forget this now, it goes back to what Count Dicula, Cheney, said about, he said, when my ancestors came here, there was no one here.
Yeah, well, they said that in Australia, too. Motherfucking, he's out now, but Tony Abbott, he said that. He said that shit, too. It was just totally empty, empty field. They say it in New Zealand. They say it in Canada. Harper said the same shit. There was nobody here. There's nobody here now. It's just us. We got a couple of Indians here, but they were living in a couple of huts and shit, and it doesn't really mean anything. So, we were able to do this because we made a law that said it was okay to do this. There's always
the most
legal
populated
projects.
Portion. In 1491, the most populated portion of the planet on Earth.
But
the Western Hemisphere, without a doubt. Oh, and by the way, just because the goddess of irony doesn't miss anything, angry. Carol tells me that today, the day that the grand jury refused to indict on the Tamir Rice case, today is the Feast of the Holy Innocents. Today is the day that the Catholic Church, if I've got my mythology right, today is the day that the Roman Catholic Church celebrates Herod's mythological slaughter of all the little boy babies in Judea, trying to knock off little baby Yeshua.
Yeah, who today wouldn't be able to get past the border?
Wouldn't get able to get over the wall.
Wouldn't even get a sandwich at the procrastinator's church,
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't be able to get any sort of help at all.
So Jack in Shreveport makes this observation. He says, So prosecutor dude gets to blame the grand jury for no justice rather than the public blaming the prosecutor for not getting justice. Precisely, which means you know, he can play both cards at election time, which I'll bet you is in 2016, and say, well, you know, we took it to the grand jury, and the grand jury knows all, sees all, speaks all, tells all, and the grand jury has spoken, and ain't that too bad? And with a nudge and a wink to the white authoritarian community, everybody knows that, you know, we're not going to have to worry about any of that Black Lives Matter stuff here in Cuyahoga County.
Well, like I said, you know, and I'm not the only one to say this, and, you know, it's pretty common sense. The average white person out here figures, well, you know, it's really unfortunate, and I feel bad that these things, because I've hadn't had
and
this guy.
And, you know, I'm not a racist.
I'm not a racist, and, you know,
I've got a Black friend.
You know, no, they'll say to me, Abby, you're my friend. You know, and you know, I've always accepted you the way you are, and your different, you know, ethnicities, and I like this person. She's really nice, but, you know, flat out, I had to tell her. You know, she's just going on about, well, you know, we're all together here, and, you know, I mean, I voted for Obama and all this type of shit. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, there's a bunch of Black people being killed by the police, and you're telling me that if these people had jobs, then maybe they wouldn't have been where they were. You know, and
how does that wait? Yeah. How does that even come into an argument over a 12-year-old?
Well, we were talking about something else.
This because I really couldn't cope in that case. Oh, really? So we need to, if we just roll back the child labor laws, is that what you're saying, Mr. Tea Party?
When you're an Uncle Tom, people think that they can say whatever the fuck, and they do. White people do not feel that they need to fucking, you know, not say certain shit to me. You know, they're just like, well, hey, it's really unfortunate. Wow, you know, and they scratch their head and they put their pint down and they're like, wow, man, you know, it's really unfortunate. But, you know, Black people really got to, they got to do something. You know, they got to, like, make changes. You know,
I do so hope they won't get angry.
Well, what they really mean is,
and divide our community.
Well, what they really mean is, you know, I'm okay with, you know, not having the violence and all that kind of shit, but you niggas don't fucking stay in your goddamn place. And when people get angry and flip out and shit, see, then we gotta fucking stomp you, and it's the bad ones. And the bad ones, and I've been told this to my face, the bad ones get out of hand because people like you justify their actions. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about? And then he went on with what he would say, basically, you know, black-on-black violence, this, that, and the other thing, even though white-on-white violence is way worse. Yeah, and that's not me. That's the goddamn Justice Department and the FBI.
But you know, in the midst of all of this, we've got to talk. I mean, you cannot separate this from something like this grand jury or the grand jury in Ferguson from ethnic injustice. But at the same time, we have got to have a conversation about what a grand jury means in 2016, because it is not what it was designed to be.
Nope.
It is the prosecutorial equivalent of a policeman's nightstick. If you use it, it's hard, but if it stays on your belt, it does almost nothing. Okay, I mean, it really is. And let me do something here real quick, because I want to make sure that she gets in as well. Tracy has called in from out L.A.-wise, and I'll just bring her in and we'll sort of mini front porch it. Are you there, Tracy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Long time no talk to. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Back from vacation. It's so funny. I'm working today, and I didn't see the tweet until right before I called when it said about the Quiet Negro. I was like, wait, what? Because I haven't really been listening to the radio because, you know, I'm driving and it's hard enough for me to drive in L.A.
Right, maintain composure.
And maintain composure. And I'm glad I didn't know about Ohio, because then I would have ran over a white person. And considering that that's all I deal with, I don't feel like catching the case. I've been to jail. It's not fun, and I do real time. So, it's just, yeah. It's exhausting being Black in this country. it is exhausting, even more so when they tell you, you know, don't get upset, you know, don't get angry, just be the noble Negro. And I'm sorry, I don't feel like I have to be the noble Negro, and because this is ridiculous. This is going beyond. I am so tired. Is that enough when young black men are just killed just because, when it's open season? But then when their justice is tromped on by these ineffectual and inadequate and just bullshit, and then you have Dennis Kasich. Is he still in the race? Has he dropped out yet?
No, he has not dropped out yet.
Okay.
And to use that word, see, and I don't know if you, angry, Tracy, mm-hmm. angry.
I've heard you on, and I love listening to you. It's nice to, excuse me.
but I don't yeah. know if, I don't know if y'all caught it. There was some code in Kasich's, in Kasich's statement.
A lot of code.
Which dog whistle are you talking about?
Okay. So you heard several. I've got it right here. Let me pull it up again. We all lose, however, if we give in to anger and
frustration. What the fuck did he lose?
Okay, whistle one. If we, what you talking about, we.
We who?
Give in to anger and frustration, but here's the little dog whistle that got me, and let it divide us. How many times have we heard right-wing, white-wing politicians, repiglickens, teabaggers, what have you, refer to Barack Obama as the divider-in-chief?
Yes. How many times?
So that was a little shot across Obama's bow. Saying, don't you come out and say that injustice was done in the case of Tamir Rice. Mm-mm, don't you do that?
Yeah, be like Ben
don't
Carson.
Don't you dare, Negro.
Be like Uncle Ben Carson. Oh well, why was he there? His mother is what we really should be talking about. Why was her boy playing with a toy gun? You know, why would a black kid want to play with a toy gun?
Why couldn't he have a knife or a hammer like Ben Carson did?
Well, look, Ben Carson's a fucking liar. He didn't do his goddamn dinner tete-a-tete with General Westmoreland and shit. He's a fucking lying son of a bitch, and his sense of archaeology is fucking totally twisted. Same thing coming out of his mouth, or Larry Elder, or Alan West, who's a war criminal, or any other goddamn black Republican, Mia Love, they can all shut the fuck up. But we're being compared to them. You know, when people got angry at me the past couple of years over, you know, a discussion on race. Oh, well, why can't you be like Obama? Basically say nothing, do nothing, have a beer with an abusive fucking racist cop. You know,
right.
Who the only reason we even know anything at all about that particular story was because it was one of the talented 10th, Skip Gates. You know, not the blackest black man in America who was arrested in his own fucking house. By a racist goddamn cop who falsified a written motherfucking report, but who was still seen as a hero by other police officers. That was the extent
right.
of Mr. Obama's radicalism, to point out that, well, maybe Eric Holder had a point, and that maybe Black Lives Matter has a point, but he hasn't defended Black Lives Matter from the Oath Keepers. He hasn't defended us from the Klan. When there was a terrorist attack against Black Lives Matter two nights in a row. The first night, five people get shot, three shots are fired the second night in front of a police station, both incidents, and nothing has happened. Where's Homeland Security? Right?
No. It's just when I hear, when they say we all lose, and like when my little white friends, when they start clutching their pearls about stuff, I'm like, bitch, shut up. I have a 27-year-old son, but every time he walks out that house, because he's that color that you don't know what he is, but he's ethnic. So, you know he's not white, so he's something. And every day, I have to worry about my son coming home. I shouldn't have to worry about that. No black mother should have to. No one should have to worry about their child coming home. and just to be shot, because why? You know, the one thing, since he drives the cab, I don't have to really, he doesn't get harassed. It's so funny, we were talking about that. When he's driving the cab, he doesn't get, the cops don't look at him twice. But when he's driving one of our personal vehicles, he notices that, you know, he gets the check, the up and down look. Like, okay, what is this new girl doing? Fortunately, we don't have newer cars, so, you know, they're old enough that they know that, okay, well, he's not.
It's an older car. It's okay for him to be driving that.
Yeah, it's the older car. This is one of those things, why should I have to worry about these things? Why should I have to worry about, okay, I can't, you know, I shouldn't have to worry about, if I want to buy a brand new car, if I could afford a 2016 BMW and I want my son, I gift it to my son, I shouldn't have to worry about whether he's going to be harassed because he's a black man driving a BMW.
Because a nigga's not supposed to have that, sis.
Or if a man of color has a BMW, he is obviously engaged in some sort of criminal enterprise.
You got to be, because you know.
How many years ago was it that the starter for the Steelers was pulled out of his Mercedes Benz and killed for being in a Mercedes Benz in black? But this idea, let me ask you both one other question about the Kasich statement.
That is bullshit. Okay, what?
Yeah, isn't there an implied threat in there too?
It wasn't implied. It was a threat. No, it's like, niggas, if you do anything stupid, we'll take you down.
I don't know if we've got any listeners. Well, we used to in Cleveland. Miss him every day. But I'm not sure about, well, Chuck-a-Punch is near there. Has the mayor of Cleveland brought out the SWAT teams and the Iraq War military surplus and the snipers and the chemical weapons yet and the flashbang grenades? I mean, are they standing by and ready to rock?
I haven't seen anything.
Are the Cleveland television news, action news, eyewitness team coverage people say Cleveland on edge with the creepy music, bum 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 bum, you know, underneath, and the crawler and the guy standing out. I don't know if it's even cold or not. Well, I'm standing here waiting for bad things to happen, Bill. Let's go to Fred in the weather center.
Hope this cojones freeze off. You know, it's like they're sitting there waiting and hoping that something jumps off. They're hoping that people didn't feel and start feeling froggy and leap. You know what I'm saying? I'm just, again, it's one of those reasons why I'm glad I didn't know. And fortunately today, because this is kind of really my first day back to work since we came back from vacation. And fortunately today, every person that I picked up was a liberal. I had a lucky day today. So my first pickup was from these people from
the universe. The universe decided not to be a buzzkill today, Tracy.
Yes, because, and like the whole time I was gone, I didn't read anything about Bobby Jindal until I was on my way home. I mean, we're literally in the taxi, on our way to the airport in New Orleans before I read anything about Bobby Jindal. So I promised myself I wouldn't get myself all worked up. And what do I read? That this asshole is going to throw 31,000 people off of food stamps. Why? Because he can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's just, I listen to these people, and all, what I think, because I am a Christian, even though I'm a black lesbian, I'm not supposed to be a Christian. Don't tell anybody. But when I hear these motherfuckers talk about Christianity and all this thing, what Jesus is y'all following? Because
white Christian conservative evangelical Jesus, blue eyes, blonde hair. Greek speaking, if not English.
With the staff holding the lamb.
Yeah, but the real one would have picked them up and threw them out like he did with the money changers in the synagogue, you know? He'd have kicked them in their ass.
See, that's the Jesus I follow, because the Jesus that I follow, if he can't, you know, and I'm tired of these fools trying to start Armageddon and all this. Okay, Jesus don't need y'all's help. When he decides to come back, he'll come back. He doesn't need cruel, like you were saying, angry. These fools don't give a fuck about a Jew. They can give a damn about the Jews. The only thing they care about is the Jews coming back to Israel in hopes of Armageddon. That's all they care about. That's keep that shit real.
Anthropologically speaking, evangelical Christianity sees Judaism as a or Jews as a fetish object. Okay?
As a what?
Fetish object. They are Jews are totemic to evangelical Christianity.
Oh.
Only because somebody told them Jesus was Jewish. That's the only reason.
I mean, if you
get the memo that Jesus is Jewish.
No, if you want to get your millennialism on, you need certain things to happen, and you got to have Jews to make them happen. I mean, there's stuff out there that just has to happen according to these wild-eyed, probably hallucinogenically derived prophecies.
That's what Pastor Hagee said. Thank God for Hitler. Because of Hitler, we have Israel. Because of Israel, the end times are coming.
Yeah, but okay, so they still have to do something about the Dome of the Rock because the temple has to be rebuilt. And yeah, you can't build the temple back up in Paraguay neither. You know, you were talking about Paraguay, Bolivia, whatever. No. It has to be there because... And the reason that European Christianity said, well, okay, was because if you can get that, then that means somebody's going to want to rebuild the temple. And if the temple gets rebuilt, then all the fun really starts then.
Well, partly the British-Israeli movement that actually pushed Churchill to put them in Israel, right? Because they were willing to put them in a bunch of other goddamn places. They were even looking at Egypt. But they were talking that evangelical thing that you just mentioned. But really, the Zionist movement, all of the founders of the Zionist movement, including Theodor Herzl, they were all atheists. They were not religious.
Yeah, but Herzl is working at about the same time, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. As the British theologian Darby is inventing millennialism, okay?
Well, yeah, the 1800s, 1880s. Yeah,
And you know, Darby's stuff has been denounced by various sects and what have you. But if you don't, but he was swallowed hook, line, and sinker by most of Protestant Christianity. So you've got to have. Israel reconstituted in order to satisfy the parable of the fig tree,
which is what they told Churchill.
And then you've got to have the temple rebuilt, and you've got to have all that stuff done for all the crazy revelation bullshit to happen. And you can't do that without the Jewish people. And consequently, that is why I say that to evangelical Christianity, the Jewish people are totemic.
Yeah, well, look at General Allenby. When he went into Palestine, he marched in on foot. Why did he march it on foot? Because he was a hardcore Christian, and he was a British Israeli. And he believed that if we come in and respect this and do this historically right, this will rebuild the temple.
Ta-da! And with that, I regret to say we have to get out of here. Tracy, I'm so glad we got to talk, and I'm glad we were able to do it all together in this lovely little conversation. It's kind of the source and essence of what we're all about here. Angry, do me a favor before we go.
Yes.
Because somehow or another, no matter how hard I try, I always screw up the website, and I get mail from people saying, how in God's name do I listen to Angry's podcast?
Oh, well, I'm sorry, everybody. Aboriginal Radio, just the way it sounds, one word, .wordpress.com. You can catch the RSS feed and all of our published shows there, at least for the past few years anyway. Because we've been on for about a long time.
Yeah, about a long time, exactly. So aboriginalradio.com, plain.
No. aboriginalradio.wordpress.com.
Aboriginalradio.wordpress.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter at The Angry Indian.
At The Angry Indian on Twitter.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hopefully, hopefully we will have that.
Well,
sort
we can remember the at The Angry Indian. I don't know about the other part, but it's all you, homie, because I can't write that shit down right now. So I am relying upon you to tweet that or whatever.
I'll connect it to Bob's account. Yeah.
Do that, please, Angry. Well, listen.
I will.
Y'all take care. Be well.
All right. Peace.
You too.
Bye now.
Peace out.
The Angry Indian and Tracy the Lady Cab Driver. And it's, well, I'll be darned. It is 9 p.m. And time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. I told you it was going to be a busy Moran Monday. We will begin the program tomorrow with $140. Thank you, Glenn, for chipping in. Thank you very kindly. Very kindly indeed. We'll begin tomorrow with $140 plus $400. Okay. So hopefully a little bite of that will be taken out somewhere between now and then. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious time in this conversation. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, one and all. Back tomorrow. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.